After a year of dating, my boyfriend Trent started to nag me about my weight. He said I'd let myself go once we started our relationship. I didn't think I was fat at all, but he just wouldn't stop talking about it. Eventually, he convinced me to join a gym and try one of those high-protein diets. After 3 months, I'd lost 15 pounds and was even skinnier than when we'd met. To celebrate the weight loss milestone, Trent said he'd take me to any restaurant I wanted. I was off my diet for the weekend. I know it sounds stupid, but the only place that I really wanted to eat at was McDonald's. For about a month, I'd had a craving for a big juicy burger. I told this to Trent and he looked at me like I'd gone insane. He said that we could go to any restaurant I wanted. Money was not a problem. But I told him that the only place I wanted to go was McDonald's. So, he agreed. We got there just around nightfall, and as soon as I entered the restaurant, I could feel my mouth start to water. The delicious, greasy smell was really getting to me. I got up to the counter and ordered a Big Mac combo. Trent said he wasn't hungry, but I convinced him to get a combo too. He paid, and then we took one of the tables in the back. We sat together, and I asked Trent how his job hunting was going. He'd been out of work for a couple months, and I earned enough for both of us, so we weren't in any financial trouble. But I could still tell that he was self-conscious. He wanted to work. He told me that he'd scheduled a few interviews, and we'd see how things would go. I told him that it was only a matter of time before he found a company that would appreciate his skills. I meant it as a compliment, but I guess he thought that I was being sarcastic. He thought that I was making fun of him for being out of work or something. He said, "Well, if I didn't spend so much time helping a fatty like you get back into shape, then I would probably have found a new job by now. You're a lot of work, you know that?" He was being hurtful, but I didn't get mad at him. I knew he meant well. Besides, I think he realized that he was out of line, because he apologized and said he didn't mean it. "I know," I told him. "I know you love me." Right afterward, I went and picked up our order. We sat there in silence, and I tasted probably the most delicious burger I'd ever had in my life. I mean, it was just a McDonald's burger, but it had been so long since I'd eaten something with any flavor in it. My taste buds were going wild. I was enjoying my meal so much that I didn't even notice when the restaurant's doors burst open. A short, very muscular man wearing a ski mask charged in. He had a gun in one hand. When he started shouting at the cashier to hand over all the money, that's when I noticed him. The restaurant was being robbed. I turned towards Trent, but he was already hiding under the table. I joined him. The robber took all of the restaurant's money and shoved it into a bag. "Get out of here," he told the worker, and she left out the back door. Now it was just me and Trent, alone with a gunman. The man looked around the room and instantly started walking toward our table. I was crouched on the ground, so all I could see were his dirty shoes. He was getting closer. "Stand up," the man ordered. Trent and I stood up with our hands in the air. The man looked at Trent mockingly. "Big spender, huh? Treating your girlfriend to a fine establishment like McDonald's?" "It was her choice," he muttered. "Good," the man said. "Then I guess it's your turn to make a choice, buddy. I'm going to let one of you go, and the other, I'm going to shoot in the kneecap, just because I want to. So make your choice. Only one of you can walk out of here." "I choose," Trent said. "I choose me." Then he ran out of the restaurant. The gunman turned toward me. I could see him smiling under his ski mask. "Some boyfriend you have," he said. "But don't worry, I'll give you a choice too. You can choose which kneecap." I'd never been more scared or angry in my life. Trent had abandoned me here with some psychopath. What kind of boyfriend was he? For the first time in all our time together, I could finally admit to myself that Trent was a loser. "Right," I said, and gave him a right hook. My fist collided with his face and he fell backwards. The gun dropped out of his hand. I kicked it out of the way and crouched over the man's body. I punched him hard in the face. "I spent 3 months starving myself and exercising every single day. I've taken boxing and Krav Maga classes until I could barely stand. Now all I want is to enjoy my freaking burger." By then, the man was unconscious. I left him there and went back to my table. I ate the rest of my burger in 3 minutes. It was so delicious. When the cops arrived, they took my statement and arrested the man. When they finally let me go, I went outside to find Trent waiting for me. I'm so sorry, babe. I left you there, he said. I promise never to do anything like that again. You're right. You won't. And I left. I walked all the way home. I threw all his stuff onto the front yard and told him to stay away from me. He tried to call me a lot after that, but I never answered. And I never saw him again, except on YouTube. I guess someone had gotten their hands on the McDonald's security footage showing Trent abandon me right before I single-handedly knocked out a criminal. That footage went viral. Trent and I both became famous for very different reasons. And now, the world knows that I'm pretty badass. His ruffling pants exposed his presence when he walked up beside me. It was the sound of sleeky iron fabric, the type that was distinguishable by the way it sounded. I looked away from my Big Mac, my eyes falling to his shoes first. The polished pair was impressive, and they glistened as though they had been dipped in a bowl of oil. I trailed up his ankle and the straight cut of his pants, so pristinely ironed I had the sense that the creases would slice open one's hands if they inadvertently ran their finger along the line. I took a deep breath, and this man, as though perceiving my attention was on him, drew his suit tighter on his body to flex the contour of his pants and how well it sat on him. My stomach tugged with envy for his style. He headed straight to the table with two empty seats away from me and sat opposite to the man who was dining on fries and a large cup of soda. I noticed the man reacted instinctively at first. He flinched and drew his hands away from the table. The man in the suit, however, continued to speak, words I could not tell because his lips moved fast. A moment passed, and the other man warmed up to the stranger. The stranger offered a handshake, and the dining man took it. It was a strange thing to witness in a McDonald's, but I had enough food and a little entertainment, so I was curious enough to watch the exchange continue. The stranger exposed a suitcase, and the other man's burger fell from his hands. I felt an indescribable feeling when his eyes lit up. My curiosity piqued, and it was with utmost restraint that I remained seated. The stranger pulled out a board, and just as suddenly, a voice broke out from the counter. Hey, this is a McDonald's establishment, not a kid's park. We don't allow any of that here. The attendant, a red-haired woman, wrinkled and bespectacled, called out. The stranger did not move, and I struggled to maintain my attention on the McDonald's counter and the man who sat on the table with the stranger. The atmosphere turned tense, but there was a stillness around the stranger that made the hair on my forearm stand on edge. The cozy smell of buns did not seem to have its effect once this new air blew into the establishment. It was dusk, and there were four of us, complete strangers to each other. Yet this strange man in a suit who I had just found fascinating seemed even stranger. The man opposite him stole glances at me. The furtive look of confusion as the McDonald's attendant started to rail at the defiance. The stranger did not slacken his character until he made the sudden announcement. I win, you lose. His tone was flat. He stood up to his feet and pulled his arms apart. The man opposite the table kept his eyes on the open suitcase just as I did. He looked straight at me and I saw the interest in his eyes. My mouth was dry even though I had food and drinks in front of me. I sensed it was my nerves fraying, but it was so terrible, even the taste on my tongue was altered to a coarse tingle. It was like a moment in a dream. I struggled to reconcile the look of betrayal in his eyes when he saw that he did not fully comprehend what he was proposing. I will collect now, the stranger said, calling both our attention to the fact that he was now standing behind the man. He reached his hands around the man's neck and pulled back what I suspected to be a string. The man's eyes widened in horror, but his scream was cut off before he could utter it. The man's neck simply wobbled, like jelly when the instrument passed into his neck. The skin of his neck remained, but the matter that held his head to his body suddenly appeared to have dissolved. The attendant let out a loud shriek of horror when the stranger shoved the man's head onto the table. The cry rocked my bones with its beastly chill. It was so deep and piercing that it gave depth to the horror I had just been assaulted with. Who wants to play my game next? There are two of you. The man said with an assuredness that made me freeze in fear. His eyes were gauzy, yet pale. His hands were white, almost drained of blood. And when I stared at it long, I soon started to notice the vein strip network etched around the back. I hoped for the floor to open up as an escape from me and the monster in front of me. I could not trust the attendant to not act rationally under panic, and it made me nervous. "You will pay," he said, and my stomach immediately sank. I shook my head, and my fuzzy mind cleared up to observe that he had not pointed at me, but at the attendant behind the counter. She shrieked, hands on her face, which had become red from trauma, and made an attempt to escape from him. He glided across the McDonald's in a steady, unwavering momentum. He did not run, and his march was so hypnotizing, he was almost onto her when I finally snapped out of the transfixation. "I'm calling the cops," I barked, shaking terribly and with no idea where I had dropped my phone. He paid me no mind. Sheer dread made my ears click. He was smiling, and I could sense his grin from where he was. "You will play the game, win or lose," he said to her, and she scrambled around to fetch a knife, but it did nothing to stop his advances at her. Still, she swung her hands to aim at him. I looked back at the body of the man who had just been murdered, and I struggled to make sense of my night at the McDonald's, which had started off with 2 large orders of fries, 1 soda, and 2 burgers. "Stay away," she cried, and her tone was so desperate and so broken. It spurred me into action without thought. I threw myself across the room and towards the counter. She aimed the knife at me, but I was fueled by such a dizzying rush that I snatched the knife from her before I realized I had. "You sick moron," I bawled as I lunged at him, whipping the knife into his neck and twisting it all the way back until it stopped by his shoulder bone. He did not resist me, and it frightened me so much that I recoiled without the knife after I had dug it in. He stopped and scoffed, gasping for breath after a moment as the color of his suit changed to mark the spread of his blood. He fell to his knees with a smile on his face, dying. "You didn't get to play," he mentioned, falling face first into the ground, dead. "Oh my God," the McDonald's attendant cried when she finally regained her senses. "Call the cops." I had just ended a strange man's life, and the horror he had visited upon strangers. I did not have the stomach for questions. I stared at her and jumped over the counter to escape the senseless barbarity I had just experienced.
My eyelids fluttered, the road ahead blurring beneath my tired gaze. I wrenched myself awake, gripping the steering wheel tighter. Taking long, deep breaths, I turned the radio up higher, letting the low bass bore into my brain and keep me awake. It had been a long night, driving home from a work conference, and it was already past midnight, the moon a pale sickle through the trees forming a canopy over the road. I knew I should pull over for a rest before my body collapsed in exhaustion, but somehow, stopping on one of these dark, abandoned roads beside the forest didn't seem like a good idea. I hadn't seen another car pass by for at least an hour, and the road stretched on into the darkness, winding through the trees like a serpent. I clenched my jaw, forcing myself to concentrate on the road, my high beams cutting through the gloom. But it wasn't long before my eyelids began to flutter again, and I could feel my head dipping forward before I yanked it back up again. If I didn't find somewhere to pull over soon, I risked drifting straight into the trees. It wasn't too long before a light pierced the darkness ahead of me, and I switched off my high beams, feeling marginally more awake than I did before. The light was a pale yellow, filtering through the trees. It wasn't coming from a car. It was only until I turned the bend did I see the sign, half covered in a trail of branches. McDonald's. I'd never been so happy to see a fast food restaurant in my life. A perfect rest stop. I followed the light, which was coming from a lamppost in the middle of the restaurant's car park, and pulled into the abandoned lot. There was nobody else here, but there were lights coming from inside, so I assumed it was still open. Cutting the engine, I climbed out of the car and stretched my sore muscles. I'd been driving for a couple of hours without a break, so it was a welcome relief to breathe in the cool night air and let it wake me up. Now that I was here, I might as well grab something to eat. I hadn't eaten since the conference dinner, which was at least 5 hours ago, so I was getting hungry. Locking the car behind me, I headed through the doors and into McDonald's. The first thing I noticed was the silence. As the doors closed behind me, shutting out the sounds of the night, I was submerged into complete hush. There was no radio crackling over the speakers, no spitting oil from the fryers, no footsteps squeaking over the floor, just absolute silence. When I looked around, I realized that I was the only one there. The tables were empty, which made sense given the lack of cars in the parking lot. But there was nobody at the order counter either, nor in the kitchens behind. Where was everyone? The door was open and the lights on, so I assumed there must have been someone here. Hello? I called out, walking up to the order counter. Anyone here? Part of me wondered if I was dreaming, if I had fallen asleep at the wheel and this was some hyper-realistic dream. Because it felt so surreal, being here alone in this empty restaurant, it felt wrong. My calls went unanswered, and I looked around wondering what to do. Maybe I wasn't supposed to be here, but why was the door unlocked if the restaurant wasn't open? I went right up to the counter and pressed my palms against the surface, leaning forward to peer further inside the kitchen. Hello? Is anyone there? I called again, but the place was empty, silent, abandoned. With a sigh, I turned around to leave when the lights above me flickered, dousing me in temporary darkness that made my pulse race. I stopped, blinking as the lights came back on. What was that all about? Behind me, I heard the soft pad of footsteps and spun around, thinking someone had finally come to take my order. The place was still empty. Had I imagined it? I reached up and rubbed my eyes, fatigue still tugging at the back of my mind. If nobody was here, then I couldn't even get a coffee to wake me up. With a prickle of apprehension, I turned back to face the door and froze. With blonde pigtails tied with red ribbons, stood in front of me, swinging her arms behind her. She smiled at me, but something about the smile felt wrong. It wasn't friendly. Where had she come from? I started. Before I could ask who she was or where her parents were, she ran off, giggling. Come and find me! Her laughter filling the space around me with an uncanny clarity. What is happening here? What have I walked into? Wait, I called after her, but she had already disappeared somewhere. Was she the only other person here? It didn't make sense. What was a little girl doing out here in the middle of the night? With a sigh, I went after her. I couldn't just leave a little girl out here alone, not until I figured out what was going on. Hey, come back here, I said in frustration, weaving through the tables and chairs toward the back of the restaurant, where the consumer toilets were. I heard a low giggle behind me and turned around, expecting to see the girl, but the room was empty. Where had she gone? The lights flickered again, and in those brief seconds of darkness, I felt movement directly behind me, the whisper of a breath on my neck that sent chills down the length of my spine. When the lights came back on again, I was almost too scared to turn around. Holding my breath, I did. The girl was nowhere to be seen. Instead, a little red ribbon lay on the floor by my feet. The same one that she had been wearing. Is she messing with me? Is this some kind of joke? I bent down and retrieved the ribbon from the floor, feeling it slip between my fingers like silk. More footsteps padded behind me, soft and dainty. My pulse raced in my ears. Behind you, a female voice whispered, edged with laughter. Before I could turn around, two small hands slipped around my neck and squeezed, and all of a sudden I was gasping for air, fumbling to remove the fingers around my throat. At first, I thought it was the little girl, but the figure pressed behind me felt too large, too tall. The grasp around my neck was too tight, too strong to belong to a child. Darkness clouded my vision, and just before I passed out, I managed to catch a glimpse of the figure behind me in the reflection of the window. It was the child, her hair tied up in pigtails, one with a red ribbon, the other without. Only, she was taller than before, with long limbs and a strange, disproportionate smile. Then everything went dark, and I felt myself falling. I jolted awake, blinking rapidly. What? I was sitting in my car, parked up by the side of the road. It was still dark, and when I checked the time, it was just after 2:00 in the morning. How long was I asleep? I rubbed my eyes, clearing away the grogginess of my vision. What a weird dream. I knew exhaustion could do weird things to your brain, but that dream was a step too far out of my comfort zone, and I shuddered at the mere memory of it. Feeling marginally more refreshed after taking a nap, I started up the engine, checked my rear view, and pulled back out onto the road. I got home an hour later, just after 3 a.m. My wife was already asleep, so I crept into the bathroom to get changed out of my work clothes. As I was removing my coat, something fell out of my pocket, and I bent down to pick it up. My fingers froze, hovering above the ground. A red silk ribbon lay curled on the floor like a snake, and I felt my heart go ice cold. Somewhere behind me, in the room where my wife was sleeping, I heard the soft, low sound of a child laughing.
Moving into a new town didn't come with a house or a place to stay, especially if financial issues stood at the peak of the reason for your movement. I searched for somewhere cheap, and fortunately I found someone looking for a roommate. Or better still, I found a sign close to an apartment expressing a need for a roommate in room 25 of the apartment. In excitement, I went there and met the owner. My intended new roommate was a smile freak. Not those smiles that are welcoming and warm, but the ones that go from one ear to the other. He would randomly look at me and smile so brightly that my heart would almost burst out of its ribcage. Not out of affection, but out of anxiety and maybe fear. He did it when I appeared at his doorstep, but I ignored it. If all he did was smile, it wouldn't cause any harm. A beggar like myself had no choice. I was desperate for a place to stay, and that was beginning to look like the cheapest I'll ever find. He seemed cool, and after discussing, he agreed to take me in while I paid half of the rent. I swallowed the offer fast and moved in immediately, but something felt off. After moving in, I realized my roommate had some weird hobbies. He liked to keep dead rodents and cut them up for fun. I didn't have many issues with the biological experiments, but I hated how the house stunk due to the behavior. My complaints about his attitude almost became a habit as regular as his. But with time, I got used to his usual response. Whenever I complained, he would give me that creepy smile and say, "Better rats than humans, huh?" Instead of making a mountain out of a molehill, I simply concluded that he was as weird as the craziness of his experiments. I got used to seeing the rodents, and even got used to the smell. Being stranded makes you put up with many things. I soon found a job and started working, although it wasn't exactly easy, and the pay didn't commensurate with the work I did as a waiter in the sole restaurant in the area. That's just like they say, half bread is better than none. The pay was the half bread I wasn't willing to lose. One night, a customer pissed me off and I stepped outside for a bit of fresh air. I stopped in my tracks when I noticed something. There was a dark silhouette staring at me just outside the range of the street lamp, blending with the darkness of the night. The image of a person just stood there, unmoving. I narrowed my eyes to check if I was seeing things, but then I realized I was not hallucinating. A weird person stood in the dark staring at me. I didn't know how to react, but I heard myself call out to whoever it was. The person didn't flinch. I could tell because the silhouette remained fixed. I took a step forward. And that was the code. The image took a step back. I took another. And every time I took a step forward, the image would take a step backward. And if I took two, the image took two, too. So I ran. I took to my heels after the silhouette, who, in turn, ran away. Although I lost whoever it was, the person dropped something. A pocket knife. I picked up the knife and went back to my work at the restaurant. Upon getting home, I was with my roommate, engrossed in his strange hobby again. I was too shocked from the encounter earlier. I just went straight into the shower. It was when I opened the tap that something hit me in the head. My roommate was using a similar pocket knife to the one I'd seen. It felt blurry, and I just knew I had to check. I sped up my time in the shower. Adrenaline rushed through me, and I tried to settle my mind upon what I was investigating, not cowering in fear. I stepped out of the shower, and although I tried to act as normal as possible, I still found my heart racing when I looked at my roommate's hands, which confirmed my fears. I was right. The knives were identical. My heartbeat raced at the idea that my roommate might have been the guy stalking me. With more courage than fear, I gathered words in my mind and practiced my speech in my head before I confronted my roommate and asked why he was stalking me. I told him about the knife I found with the stalker and stared at him in disgust and fear, I may add. However, with that creepy smile on his face, he said one of his knives had been stolen some weeks back, and the person might have been the one, or it was probably just a strange coincidence. The excuse made no sense to me, but what could I do? I made a resolve in my heart to save some money as soon as I could, rent another apartment, and move out. But I knew that wouldn't be happening too soon, so I also made the resolve to stay vigilant. Surprisingly, the same thing happened at work the next day, and the next, and the next, and each time I was never able to catch the stalker. After a while, I got tired of the rat race and stopped chasing. A few days later, one weekend while at home, I decided to have a movie night by myself, since my roommate had traveled the day before to see his family in another town. As I was enjoying the movie, with only the light from the screen barely lighting up the room, I heard the growling of my stomach and decided to cook dinner. As I stood up, I saw, in the corner, blending with the darkness, the silhouette of a person. I jumped in fright because I could never be sure that I'd lock the door before settling in for the movie. I would have run off, but the person jumped on me and hit me with something hard, knocking me out instantly. I woke up to a person in a strange mask whistling a tune. I was strapped to a table in a very strange room. My mouth was covered with tape. As for the whistling masked man, he walked over to me and took off his mask. I was shocked to see that familiar, creepy smile. I always knew my roommate was crazy, but I never thought it was from the psychopathic angle. Those encounters with that stalker, I had long concluded that it was just a silly prank by my roommate. But this time I was sure it wasn't a prank. As my roommate picked up a pocket knife and started to cut into my stomach, he slowly whispered,
"Better human than rats, yes."
Crazy thoughts ran through my head. And that's when I thought about it. It was the same with the rodents. They were all operated on while they still had life in them. With a small amount of energy left in me, I grabbed an injection from the side table and launched it into my roommate's body. I didn't know what it was, but he passed out.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's The Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
And after I regained some strength, I ran away. Not just from my crazy roommate, but also from that creepy neighborhood.